make love. You know how I know?
Because we're in a courtroom and I've got judicial immunity.
Not as much that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV.
Stripped away all your rights.
You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed.
Oh, please don't put me in jail. I didn't do anything wrong, and I've got all the evidence to prove my innocence.
You mean, oh, yeah.
But you mean, oh, yeah, it's business time. Welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. It's the lighter side of genocide, the lighter side of the bench, in the judicial sense of the word. A very special guest for you, ladies and gentlemen, our Kiwi collaborator for today. His name is Vince Seema, a man I've known for a number of years, and by all accounts is probably one of the most bravest activists in the country, and really does hold the most powerful and the most immune to account. And his website is www.kiwisfirst.co.nz. And our American listeners, you'll recognize the accent, and the New Zealand listeners, you might be surprised. Vince, welcome to the program. Vince Seema, are you there? Oh, unfortunately, we don't have our guest. But basically, the idea of getting a public watchdog who keeps an eye on the government is probably the one of the most important, probably the central pillar of any democracy to function, is to have independent people who are basically just there to agitate and expose the corrupt ones. You know, that's all it is. If you're doing nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about. It's like the exact same justification that the TSA gives to take away all our rights, you know. Because when you work for the government, in my opinion, you shouldn't really have any rights, okay? You are a slave, servant to the people, okay? And you should have to do so proudly, diligently, and without corrupt motives. Vince Seema, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny, and good morning or good afternoon, wherever the time frame is. I would like to say, first of all, I don't consider myself an activist. I'm more for transparency in a broad sense. Unfortunately, that makes me public enemy number one among the judicial, the very parochial judicial community in New Zealand.
What does the word parochial mean? Sorry, you'll have to educate me a little bit on this one.
Basically, it means very narrow. In the scope of talking about the judicial community, it means that it's family. They're all, if you look at Kiwis First, I recently ran an article about the relationships between the judges. We are told and we accept that we're in a small country and the judges will know many of the people who appear before them. But it goes way beyond that. Judges in New Zealand are appointed from a very small subsection of that, of the 4 million people. They are there by virtue of the fact that their father was a judge, or because they're mates with other judges or related. And I think there's 60 high court judges, which includes the Court of Appeal and Supreme Court. Many of those are first cousins, immediate family members, as even a husband and wife in those 60. And overwhelmingly, they're former Crown prosecutors or Crown entities. So the biggest problem we have in New Zealand is really you don't have any independence of the bench separate from the Crown. That puts people at a tremendous disadvantage when they go to the court. And what we have
I imagine, Vince, that when you get involved with Crown business, there's a lot of inbreeding involved anyway. So it's just a natural consequence.
It is, but I find that it's more pronounced in the courts. And I've been exploring as to why that really is. I think traditionally there's an element. Keep in mind that of the 60 or so high court judges in New Zealand, there's only two that consider themselves Maori, but you couldn't tell by looking at them. And there's only three that have been born offshore, and they were all in England, but were basically raised in New Zealand. So when it's a fair observation to say they all look like family, they really do. And it's not a fair representation of the people of New Zealand, nor is it any kind of diversity. And when you don't have a lack of, when you have a lack of diversity on the court, you basically, that inbreeding, as you said, results in a parochial mentality that carries off over into the inability to independently analyze what might be a corrupt decision of the lower courts. So what you have is a series of cases are going up through the chain now to the Supreme Court, and they're basically being set, the judgment's coming out at the highest court level that, well, the judge used proper discretion, even though it's clear to see that they have just violated the law to get their decision that they've come to. And I can give several clear examples of that. And the topical thing in New Zealand right now is the assault on trial by jury. And
This is mostly related to the recent, what are they called, the recent terror raids, as they called them, because the raids themselves were terrifying, not the terrorists that they were allegedly flying, or like people doing painting and stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, they call it Operation 8. It had to do with the Uriah Forest raids, and it was a 13-month, multi-million dollar police surveillance. It culminated in the arrest of 18 New Zealand citizens who were initially charged with terrorism. I was, I think you know, Vinny, one of the few in New Zealand who actually saw the police evidence, which was suppressed by court order. And I can tell you, there's no way these people should have been charged as terrorists. And in fact, it was only through public protests on the street that those charges were dropped. Now, the unfortunate thing for those people, having been initially labeled terrorists by the Crown judges have to justify that the police and the Solicitor General didn't act totally like loose cannons. And it is a subject of a United Nations complaint and has been since the raids in October 2007, I think it was. But what I find very offensive is that Justice Winkleman, the High Court judge who actually read, cherry-picked some of the worst bits from the police evidence and read it out in open court, even though she maintained suppression of the document from the public, she actually said that these people, that they're not entitled to a trial by jury because, get this, a jury of 12 good New Zealand citizens would use, quote, improper reasoning processes to reach their conclusion. That's scary. That's Stalinist stuff.
Well, the proper reasoning process is to say that evidence doesn't matter, freedom doesn't matter, and we should just do whatever the judge tells me because I'm a dumb slave. That's the jury they want.
Well, it's interesting that what they're saying is it's an assault to the people in New Zealand. Because when you think about it, juries do not make decisions in law. They have a very narrow brief. When they sit in on a trial, they cannot make, and they're instructed by the judge, not to venture into areas of law. And if they do, the judge will overrule their decision in that respect. They have a very narrow brief, and that's to look at the facts. Now, what we have here is the worst case of, and the most expensive prosecution in New Zealand history. It's already at that level. And there's a strong, as you can imagine, incentive for the Crown to justify all this expense. So the overwhelming pressure on the Crown judges and the prosecutors to find these people guilty of something. If they get off scot-free, I mean, there could be a revolution against the courts for letting it go this far. Now, when you put in that very real human nature perspective, you realize that these people, more than anybody, needs trial by jury. And last week, the Court of Appeal, I'm sorry, 3 weeks ago, the Court of Appeal upheld the judge's decision not to allow trial by jury. And they suppressed, like the judge at the High Court level, suppressed her reasoning for it. I actually have a copy of the judgment because I run a Law Report's website. It's kiwisfirst.co.nz or kiwisfirst.com. And because I actually reported accurately what the judge's reasons were, I'm being prosecuted now by the Solicitor General, who's seeking my imprisonment yet again for breaching a suppression order, which really wasn't a suppression order. The judge didn't order it suppressed. It was rubber. This is the system we live in. The judge is no longer order suppression. The clerk rubber stamps the top copy saying it's suppressed.
So,
I know it's become routine in the court. And this is where people can be forgiven for not really knowing the depth and the extent of the problem in the court, of the real, I don't hesitate to say, lawlessness. That despite the fact that the Bill of Rights and the Crimes Act mandates, these are statutes, mandate these people are allowed a trial by jury, you have a judge who says, in effect, juries are too stupid to figure this out.
Well, I remember I was listening to Radio Live once, Vince, and a guy came on and he said, well, he was on a jury, and one of the women on the jury voted guilty when everybody else was voting innocent because the guy was wearing a yellow tie, the defendant was. or they'll vote innocent if they think that the defendant is hot or something, you know. And this kind of stuff happens. There are really dumb jurors, but
this is what I have to say to that. My response to that is the cumulative knowledge of 12 people in the jury, even if there's a few stupid ones, is much better than the single position of a judge who is not an average person on the street. Let's face it, I mean, their whole life they've spent mired in the law. They're used to arguing legal issues on the head of a pin. This is not the appropriate person to sit on a jury. In fact, do you realize that lawyers are prohibited from sitting on juries for that reason? They want the reason, and this goes back to the Magna Carta, it's the only real act, a section of the Magna Carta that's enforced around the world, and in democracies, is the right to trial by jury. And the reason for that is quite simple. It's well proven that even if you have a couple stupid ones, that they sit down, they argue it out, between them they reach a decision. Is it always right? I'm sure. I mean, we all know that it can't always be right. But neither is a judge's decision always right. What it does take away is the partiality or potential bias of the judge. And as any lawyer will tell you, there's certain judges that are, they would, depending on the case they're arguing, certain judges they would like to hear the case and certain judges that they would hate to hear the case because of the judge's innate bias, sensibilities, sensitivities, whatever the case may be. Judges develop a reputation for being a very harsh judge, a very easy judge, and that's not fair either. I mean, that puts the defended at the luck of a draw of getting a good or bad judge.
Oh, and it means that the lawyers can make extra money as well. They basically, like, they'll know what the judge's reputation is based on their client and that kind of thing. So they can say to their client, look, I want you to enter no plea here, right? So that the next time we come into district court, we'll have a different judge. and that way he gets an extra couple of hours of hundreds of dollars an hour worth of lawyer's fees.
Well, that's an interesting point. I would have to say that I rarely see that occur in New Zealand. And I think the reason for that is because it's a small judicial community. If a lawyer is asking a judge, and it shouldn't be this way, but a lawyer asking a judge to disqualify themselves on the basis of a conflict of interest or perceived bias or any other host of reasons which justify disqualification, will raise the ire of the judge. And that goes in the cloistered halls of power in the courts. Though that word spreads, and those lawyers pay a price. It's a very vindictive, as well as parochial, society. Lawyers who practice regularly before the court know that.
Could we possibly, like, wind back the clock here? And say that it's like Renaissance England, you know, it's 1700, something like that. It's the Queen's Court, and everybody's scurrying around, currying favor, and screwing over the common man to enrich themselves. Fast forward to today, is it any different?
Well, you know, people ask me Well, first of all, I get a when I talk about the parochial nature of the courts, the general response, and I think it's conditioning. It's indoctrination. People generally say, "Well, we're a small country; we've got to expect that." But I would say, to answer your question, in short, yeah, it's very much like that in New Zealand, and it can be like that anywhere: U.S., Canada, Australia, the U.K. But unlike those other countries, New Zealand has a problem, two main problems. One is the media doesn't report judicial misconduct. I mean, in Australia, as we saw a couple of years ago, a judge went to prison for lying about getting a traffic ticket. In the U.S., judges go to prison all the time. You don't have that in New Zealand. Never had it. They cover it up, and the media won't report on it. The second problem is, even if you get a bad judge at the appellate level in Canada, or the U.K., Australia, or the U.S., at the trial level, you can expect to get a fair shake and an arm's length perspective at the Court of Appeal or the appellate court. Well, that doesn't happen here in New Zealand because there's a revolving door nature where the judges who are actually on the high court elevate themselves for certain cases to sit on the Court of Appeal. Now, you rarely, but it has happened, have the same judge review at the Court of Appeal their previous court decision. Of course, anybody can tell you that's not an independent review of the earlier decision. But what you do get, because the Court of Appeal president picks who sits on the case, you don't have an arm's length chance of having it independently assessed. So we lose that opportunity. More times than not, if we have a decision that just goes against the law, blatantly goes against the law at the lower court or the high court level, you go to the Court of Appeal, you can't expect it to be reversed, and oftentimes it's not. And we've seen that three times here in the last 2 years on the question of trial by jury. And if you've got time, I'll go through the three cases.
Go ahead.
Okay, there's Gregory versus
actually,
Dolan,
we're coming up to break very shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest is Vince Seamer from kiwisfirst.co.nz. That's Kiwis, K-I-W-I-S, first.co.nz. And they basically is the leading judicial watchdog in New Zealand. And I think the international community can certainly learn a lot from his methods. And one of the interesting things was when you had three judges that were presiding over you, and two of them had previously been employees of the person who you were against. It was just like, whoa, conflict of interest is not the exception. It is the rule of law. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, The Lighter Side of Genocide. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. And we interview Kiwi activists on this show more than any other radio show in history worldwide, I'd probably wager, by this point. And you know what's really interesting about doing that specifically and being the only one who does it? Is that it's quite the catalogue of incredible knowledge, and it's very inspirational. Because I get to speak to some of the most amazing individuals who are tough, intelligent, and really have quite interesting and often dastardly things to say about the current way society runs that the mainstream media will never, under any circumstances, try and tell you the way it needs to be said. Vince Seymour, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Vinny.
Mm-mm-mm. Give us a breakdown. The legal system itself, in my opinion, it's basically just the way that they have an administratum over human activity. And that's more or less what laws are supposed to do, I guess. But however, the laws themselves are based in a way that seems very reasonable. Like, you know, if you break somebody's car or something like that, or if you murder somebody, obviously, you know, you should be punished and go to jail. But the problem is, now the laws that are there are being used on innocent people, and in my opinion, it's not isolated at all. It's frickin' rampant where innocent people wind up being at the gun end of the legal system, at least in this country, and I have no doubt it's everywhere. What exactly is the mechanism by which they can keep on getting away with this? It's just a matter of media exposure, isn't it?
Vinny, I've wondered that myself. A number of years ago, a retired New Zealand judge, Sir Thomas Thorpe, wrote a book, and he analyzed 44 of the most high-profile murder cases in New Zealand. And he determined in his analysis and examination of each case on its merits that a stunning 38% of those convicted could have actually been innocent for murder. But it wasn't a wake-up call, and you have to wonder why. People don't say, well, what? Look, there's something going on here. You know, that so many people could potentially be in prison for murder where they didn't do it. And this isn't just somebody making the allegation. This is a retired knighted judge of New Zealand who's come to that conclusion. The laws are right, but there's an erosion of the laws. People don't realize that now, and this happened, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, somebody can be convicted of a serious crime based on the uncorroborated evidence of one person. And this has actually happened in the historic Mount Maunganui rape trials. There was this one woman who came back 20 years later and said that the three men raped her. Well, they were convicted. One was finally, I think he won his appeal, but they were convicted based solely on her testimony. Now, that in itself is quite scary, to think that one person can make an allegation and carry it through and have somebody sent to prison for it. I didn't sit in that case. I don't know what it is. But now we have, and the Chief Justice has gotten so bad that the Chief Justice, part of the system, the Chief Supreme Court Justice, has come out against this law. Parliament is considering a law that requires a defense in a criminal case to put forth its reasons or the grounds for its defense prior to trial. And if it fails to do so, it's lost the right to raise that defense. That escapes many people, the significance of that. But I can tell you a couple ways that that's tremendously significant. One is that it allows the Crown an unfair advantage to try to subvert that. But equally, I mean, I had a trial subverted, but equally, if something happens during the trial that makes this a valid defense that wasn't there before, you can't raise it. So if it turns out that somebody gets on a stand and perjures themselves, for example, and it's quite clear, and it raises a whole other issue of law, that they can't come in with a different defense. For example, they said, well, you know, before that, or even if it's truthful, they say, well, you know, before it happened, the person was suffering delusions and was on medication or something. They don't raise that before. They can't raise that as a defense for, you know, getting an accident or causing some
Aren't most of these judges, like, really, really old and taking heart medication and acting under the delusion that their job does any good for the community anyway? So why couldn't we charge them for being, you know, drugged and delusional?
Well, I don't think there's a problem with age. My own observation, well, judges, up until a couple of years ago, they had to retire at 67 or 68. Now they've just raised that to 70, which is not tremendously old. There are a lot of judges, in my opinion, who are too young. There's a few that are in their early 30s, and that, I find that very difficult. They don't have the life experience or the depth of knowledge in the law at that age to really be a good jurist. But I do agree with you that they very quickly become mired in their own self-importance, and that carries over in their decisions. The arrogance of some of the decisions, it's almost like they don't live in the community. That they spend their days in a very cloistered environment where all they see is their fellow members from the country club and the certain circles that they live in. Many of them are quite detached from real society. And it's apparent when you read some of the decisions.
Well, maybe the gods of Mount Olympus didn't really care too much about the comings and goings of man and felt that they could play with their lives because they weren't on the ground there with them. And this is something that I think is really stressful in our society is that people have come to be as powerful as gods, you know. They can command life and death. Who gets locked away in the underworld for 1,000 years, you know, that kind of thing. It's like we're living in a freaking feudal pagan society, you know, that's really dressed up and technologically advanced.
Well, there's certainly a class element to it, and I'll give an example. If a Maori kid of 18, 19 steals a car, it'll be headlines, and the cameras are invited into the courtroom for the trial to show that, and it's playing on the public sphere that the judges and the crown are there to protect them from all this, you know, property theft and violent crime and whatever. So they play that element up. But when you have, like, what's happening in these finance companies where the pensioners are out, you know, their life savings, not just a few dozen, but thousands of New Zealand pensioners are out basically their entire savings because of these finance companies ripping them off. These directors don't even get any prison. They get a slap on the hand. The judges are incapable of understanding and perceiving white-collar crime, and it's because they're accustomed to it. And they don't really see that these people are retired and are eating bread because these white-collar criminals have ripped them off, that's worse than the person who had the car stolen by the teenager. So there is that inequity, and it's very much class-based, and it's because there is no diversity on the court.
Well, the law doesn't make sense, you know, and that's because it wasn't written by people who weren't insane, you know. that's my total assumption, that the law is insane because it's written or administered by the insane. And a specific type of insanity that I'm talking about is a sociopath, psychopath, somebody who basically has no concern for human life other than their own and their own selfish interests. And the American Medical Journal defines these people as the kind of individuals who are very nice, personable, and great to be around in person, but there's very little depth to their character, and they don't have very many long-term close relationships with people. That's what a psychopath is defined as. And the three places that you are likely to find such people is in business, politics, and the entertainment industry. What would you say is the three governing sectors of society that have the most undue influence over it? or maybe even do influence. It'd be those three, wouldn't it? So is it any surprise then that the world
really
seems
sure,
absolutely
nuts? You've done more research on that than I have, so I just, it's, I mean, it's very intriguing, but, I think in the case of judges, they are very narcissistic by large because everybody bows to them, so that's a natural tendency, and because they don't really talk generally with the people in the community, but rather with some people of their own elite status, they are out of touch. So they do develop oftentimes that certain psychopathic element to their behavior. But as far as the groups that it encompasses, you're obviously more up on that than I am.
Well, it's just kind of like if you look at a hologram, for example, no matter which part of the hologram that you focus on, you're still seeing the exact same image. It's just a larger version, magnified, right? And so that's what happens when I look at a business that's being run in a corrupt way or a government or a judicial system. It's like every system is basically the same, and it's more or less a tuning fork or a resonator for every other type of system, because in my experience, my research has led me to believe that a lot of things are governed internationally, not nationally with sovereignty, but by globalist entities that have plans for all of this. The Urawera raids, the terror raids, for example, coincided with something like 15 other countries did large-scale terror operations of the same nature on the same day. So it doesn't take somebody who's terribly bright to think that, yes, they may well have been coordinated. And these judges that we have, I believe our justice minister and the justice ministers of, America and England and whatever, they all meet secretly every year. They coordinate international lawmaking. Now, this completely throws out the window any kind of idea of open diplomatic, suggestion to, available to the bright lights of public media for the scrutiny of the public. So it means that essentially, if you've got a group of psychopaths who have not only immunity from the law, but also obscurity from the public's view, there is no telling what they could be cooking up. So therefore, it is logical to assume the worst and act accordingly.
Well, it's logical certainly to assume that the setting is ripe for the worst. And Abraham Lincoln said that any man can handle adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. Well, in the New Zealand courts, which is my specialty, you have unlimited power, these judges, and they're able to actually control the official record. Courts are not required to record what happens, and the official record is actually what the judge says it is. He writes a summary after the hearing. So it's a very dangerous situation. But, it's well known that dictators through history, to talk about your broader point, have used wars and stirring up strife and fear of the public to create a nationalism that keeps their grasp on power.
That's what they try to do, isn't it, Vince? As soon as their reach exceeds their grasp, their fist closes and then they smash it all. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Vince Seamer from KiwisFirst.co.nz. Join us in the chat room at theVinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, but let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the laceration, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, in a holocaust.
Welcome back! Oh, yeah! Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. My very special guest joining us, final segment of this hour, is Vince Seamer from KiwisFirst.co.nz. Welcome back from break, Vince.
Thank you.
Let's get into this closing segment with a bang, shall we? If I were to try to strike down the legal system, what exactly would I need to do?
If I'm I were not to sure. try and really turn my mind to that.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I think the whole thing needs to be thrown out. Like, let's push the frickin' reset button is what I'm saying. Everything that is currently in law, or at least the entire bunch of clique of people that are running the show, at the very least, need to go. You know? Total fresh start. It would be almost impossible to generate the kind of political will to promote something that would create that much instability, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would, because of that very word, instability. It would result in likely anarchy. Having a set of rules that people actually agree with and are equitably applied is the hallmark or the benchmark of a fair and civilized society. So as long as the laws are equitable, but we've evolved from that or devolved from that to where it's we have laws that are inequitably applied, and they're done by people who in many cases ought not be there, but because of immunity or the lack of accountability and a closed nature of the system itself, people aren't aware of how bad it's become. And I've given thought to, as far as what simple things and achievable things are able to as a first step to improve the situation. And one of those things, as I mentioned early on, is transparency. If people push for the obvious of having judges accountable, or to, at least to the official record that is accurate, that will create a situation where even dishonest judges are less likely to protect their mates who appear before them, because people, if they're not there, will be able to read the actual and full record of what occurred. Three years ago, I put a petition to Parliament asking, there's a Public Records Act 2005, which is a very succinct and good act, which says that all areas of government must keep full and accurate records, and that these records must be properly archived. Well, that's good for the population at large, because that means that, you know, these people are held accountable, at least to their actions in the official capacity, that people can go in and see what they are doing and what they've done. But believe it or not, the judiciary in New Zealand said, no, we're not going to be told what to do. Our process of maintaining a record, which, as I said earlier, with the judges writing down what they say occurred, is by custom, and that's more important than any act that Parliament might impose upon them, and in fact threatens their independence. Well, that's scary. And it goes to the root of why so many people are upset with the whole system and think it needs to be chucked out. You know, if you do chuck it out, you need to have a solution as to what to put in its place. And I haven't heard a comprehensive solution to that. What I believe the problem is, that it's just gotten to a situation where you have the criminals, inmates in charge of the asylum. Basically, the people who are there don't have the noble intentions to do right in a large sense, in a broad sense. Not all of them, but many of them, too many of them, are there to feather their own nest and protect their friends and don't give a stuff about the rule of law. And that's why it's degraded to a point where people feel that the system, the entire system, needs to be chucked out.
Well, thank you very much, Vince, for coming on the show with us today. Is there anything else special that you want to leave with the listeners as a parting gift?
No, I think it's been a very good show, and I want to thank you, Vinny, for allowing me to on the show. I'm a very big fan of the work that you do in New Zealand. Few people have the energy and the foresight and the tenaciousness that you've demonstrated, and I'll close with that.
All right. Well, that's good enough. Well, I've had a couple of conversations with people today and find myself blowing my own trumpet. And I guess it's because when it comes to alternative media in New Zealand, you can't hear any other trumpets at all. Yeah. And it's a great responsibility that I have. And I'm very, very willing to bear that burden, quite frankly, because it means that people who otherwise aren't filmmakers, aren't broadcasters, can get some amplification to their voices that they really need and society truly deserves to hear what people like you, Vince, and my next guest, Evelyn Gilbert, have to say. And, well, quite frankly, if we had a credible media to start with who were exposing what was going on, who were talking about taboo topics, who were getting their noses dirty and in the face of corrupt scum who rule this frickin' show, we wouldn't be in this mess to begin with. So let's bring it back and bring it into their teeth. Because we're armed to the teeth, because we got info up to wazoo, and there's nothing that can stand in the way of the facts. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Back in a moment.